Hi, my name is Nicholas Kühner, and I'm going to be running a series of podcasts on brand strategy and digital marketing.
If that wasn't exciting enough for you, we've got some of the best guests in the world who are going to tell us some of their wins, some of their biggest fails, and some tips and tricks they wish they knew when they started out on their journey. So if you're in marketing or sales or anything to do with communications, this is the podcast for you, and I look forward to having you join us.
Come chat with Nicholas. He'll listen to you. Then he'll laugh and then he'll cry with you. It's all in a safe space for you to speak your truth. Oh, come and chat with me.
Tiffany Chan, spiritual advisor. Awesome to have you with me today.
And lovely to be here.
I hope we can have a nice long chat. So obviously, when people see your bio and see that you're a spiritual advisor, but you also have an MBA from Babson, have worked at the, you know, are a global leadership fellow at the World Economic Forum, and a host of other things, they're going to think, what is this? And that obviously is one of the questions we're going to discuss, is why is the spiritual side of your life important these days? Obviously, people don't go to church as much anymore, and there's a movement away from spirituality and more into sort of humanism. So it would be very good to talk about how the spirituality or the spiritual advisory work that you're doing ties into the current zeitgeist or into the current world that we've got now. So yeah, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here with you.
And I think the first thing obviously is why don't we go into a little bit of your background and talk about who is Tiffany Chan?
Sure, absolutely. So as mentioned, I'm a spiritual advisor. I largely cater towards senior executives and founders who are looking to embody a higher level of consciousness. As mentioned, you know, a lot of people are going through a lot of stuff right now, and they're hungering for more, whether it be more meaning, more purpose, more like life. They know that there's another gear that has yet to be explored, but they don't necessarily know what it is or how to access it. And that's where I come in. As mentioned, you know, there's a lot that's going on in the world. A lot of people have gone through a lot of crap during the pandemic, right? And people are in the midst of reevaluating their life priorities. And they're knowing that, man, I know that I'm more than just my brain. Something funky has shifted in terms of how I'm relating to the world. I know that the ways that I'm perceiving things are slightly different, but I don't necessarily know what's going on. And so they reach out to someone like me because they're looking to provide some context as well as some ability to be able to access what I believe to be the supernatural or something that's greater than themselves. Other people may use words like God, spirit, source, the divine, spirit, universe. I don't care what you call it. It's that thing that's bigger than all of us that we know that we're a part of, right? That we know that exists, but we don't quite know what it is or how to access it. And essentially what I do is I come in. The universe, what I believe is the universe is constantly speaking to us, constantly sending signals our way. And it's our ability to be able to translate that. So that's what I do. I channel energy on behalf of people. I essentially be able to translate the messages that are coming from source. And then I actually work with founders and senior executives so that they can do it themselves. Right? Because I don't want to cause like a sense of like false dependency. I want everyone to recognize that yes, the universe is constantly guiding us. Yes, we are naturally like attuned to be able to be sensitive to these energies. And if you have these skill sets, which I believe they are skill sets, you will be able to do it on your own and then be able to live a more magnificent, fulfilling life. So I'm just going to stop right there. I've said a lot already.
Yeah, no problem. Well, one of the questions that comes up or misconceptions that there are out there is that entrepreneurs and wealthy people and people at the top of their game are confident, happy, know where they're going. How often have you seen that this is the case or isn't the case? And are these the kind of folks who are coming to you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's generally folks who have done fairly well in life, but at the same time have reached the pinnacle and have seen through the charard. You know, there's something about being like, okay, there's a target, whether it be a title or certain financial attainment, and therefore I'm going to be happy, right? We all have those particular priorities. I know in my personal journey, I had the same. And then when you finally get there, you're like, WTF, what's going on? I thought that I would be, you know, happier, more fulfilled, peaceful, like have a sense of like stillness. And if anything, I actually noticed the exact opposite. People are anxious, really insecure with themselves, doubting their abilities, and that they're thinking that, oh my goodness, I know that I've fulfilled everything that was on the checklist, everything that society has expected of me, but I know that there's more, and that's where spirituality comes in.
Yeah, I guess the guys starting out in their hustle or the grind for have got this driving force behind them sometimes. And once you do get to the pinnacle and you do see that, okay, well, what's the next step? It's not necessarily more money. It's not necessarily more things. There really is that missing angle. And I think that discussion in terms of getting yourself ready for that point as well, you know, is what is driving you the most valuable and the most important thing. Is this going to give your life meaning, or are you going to find out that this is you've actually been following the wrong path after 40 years of work or 20, 30 years of work, and then you've got to start from scratch? So from that perspective, you know, doing this sooner than later, or having this awareness and understanding is probably better early in an entrepreneur's journey rather than, okay, I've made all this money, now what?
Yeah, exactly. And what I find, Nicholas, is that everyone goes through this, you know, whether you call it like a midlife crisis or a traumatic accident, a divorce, you know, failing at your business, you know, there is something in everyone's personal journey where they hit that wall and they start cracking and they start falling apart. And in my belief, it's your soul essentially beckoning you to be able to transform. What I like to say is that pain is an invitation for transformation. And in my personal journey, you know, we'll talk about that later, but essentially, like, I hit that wall and I essentially fragmented. I fell on my knees. I had to start from scratch. Yes, I had all these accolades. I had the MBA from the fancy university. Yes, I worked with the 0.0001% of the most powerful, wealthy people in the world. And yet at the same time, that wasn't enough. And I found myself in basically a pool of depression and needed to build myself up because I was aligning my life to what I thought the world had wanted me to achieve. And I did really well at that. But at the same time, I felt terribly insecure. And so what this path is in terms of what I guide people towards is, what is your true self? What is that part of you, your soul, that never dies, that is calling you towards something pure, more aligned, more divine in terms of who you are and the largest potentiality of what you're here to manifest in the world? And it may not be, it likely will not be what society is asking of you, but it is true and aligned with the deepest part of your heart and the truth of who you are. And allowing yourself to be able to express that authentically is essentially what I do with people.
Yeah, I completely subscribe to that. Obviously, having had great successes and great catastrophes at the same time, I think you know, you try and see how, you know, you can level those elements off. But because this is a marketing and digital marketing podcast primarily, I want to see, how do we tie your sort of spiritual advisor work, and we'll touch on you being a master Akashic healer and maybe what that is. So let's go into that, and then I want to see, how do we use this in marketing? Because, and my foundation for this is because everything's been done. AI is doing a lot of our work. A lot of things that used to take a lot of time in the past is now gone, and I'm grateful for that. It's like washing machines and vacuum machines. Now we don't have to do this donkey work. now we've got to move away from sort of the machine, which is where the AI and that is taking us and where everyone's fixating on, and seeing, okay, how do we bring it back to people? How do we bring it back to connecting with people in a more meaningful way than what an AI thinks we want to hear, which is just marketing promotion and market research, you know, behind all the statistics that AI is going to be using to spam us with relevant marketing in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. So here's what I'll say about that. I love AI. I love what it does for my life. And when I sense into it energetically, there is a hollowness to it, meaning that whenever I receive the output of what it like gives back to me, I can feel that it doesn't have the heart-centeredness, the humanness, the realness, like sort of like the substance that we all know that is real and true. You don't necessarily can like feel it or touch it, but within our bodies and within our hearts, we don't necessarily like really want to lean into it. Part of the reason why I feel so strongly about working with people, about fine-tuning their intuition, is because it is distinctly human. It is the part of us that can never be replicated by AI. And when you fine-tune your intuition and when you fine-tune your ability to make sense of what is real and what is not, you're able to decipher how to navigate into the world, right? We're coming up in a world where everything is generated by computers, where we can't tell the difference about what is real and what is fake. When I work with leaders, they're constantly bombarded by all of these decisions, and they don't necessarily know what is real. When we actually allow them to refine their skill set, to build the skill set of like, what is truth, what is more substantive, they're able to like guide themselves as well as their communities towards what is truth, because there's a lot of noise in the system right now. And when you actually have that ability to fine tune your intuition, all that stuff doesn't matter as much. And you're able to like provide a clear pathway for yourself as well as your organization.
Well, I see quite a few parallels between, you know, ChatGPT and the responses it gives out and the sort of the university mills and the, you know, what we've been taught in universities and schools at the moment. It's all very sort of, it's not authentic. And for example, if you look at ChatGPT and you don't feel that it's giving you a response that is meaningful, you can say, well, say it in a, you know, give it a more empathetic note or empathetic touch. So it actually can be pretty close to reality, but it mirrors the fact that it's just words. They don't mean anything. So it's just platitudes. And I think when we go into this AI age, the difference between companies or people and businesses that embrace potentially the spirituality side in terms of bringing in more realness, if I can use a really awful, awful word.
It's a great word.
And into their work and how they run businesses, because the AI is going to run things like, you could make it run like an empathetic boss, an empathetic leader, benevolent leader. But that's not going to be good enough.
People respond to love. People respond to truth. People respond to honesty, sincerity, authenticity. The more that we connect into our true self, the more that we are aligned with our, what I believe to be our divinity, the more that we're able to make substantive impact in the world. The fact of the matter is that leadership is forever changed. Yes, you can have an AI that can help you make decisions about like A, B, like which path to do. But ultimately, if you're going to galvanize substantive change, if you're actually going to lead people, you have to appeal to their heart. You have to use both your head as well as your heart. And what I do is help people access all the parts of their knowing so that they can be able to show up fully and to be able to make significant change in the world.
Yeah. Well, obviously, we hope more people take advantage of what you're teaching, Tiffany. So why don't we go a little bit into what is Akashic Healing and how does your process work? What, you know, this is something I've never heard of before. And, I know all the world major religions and this is one that hasn't sort of cropped up. So
totally.
Why should I take your word for it?
Well, I mean, whether or not you take your word for it, I'm ambivalent. The truth of the matter is that it exists and that's real. The Akashic Records goes by many names in the Judeo-Christian tradition. It's actually known as the Book of Life. In physics, it's known as the quantum field. It's essentially that fabric of consciousness that exists across all time, spaces, dimensions, and all levels of consciousness. So every thought, every word, every emotion, every event, everything actually has an energetic signature. And it exists on the material plane, but then also in the immaterial plane. And we all have the ability to be able to access this field, whether or not you call it the quantum field, the Akashic field, and we're able to basically sense into not only what has happened in the past, what has occurred in the present, and what will actually happen potentially in the future. And as mentioned, we all have the natural ability to connect into this field because we are part of this field. We're all part unified in this one consciousness. We are natural receptors, naturally connected into the divine. So therefore, we have a natural receptivity to be able to like do this. And I'll give you a tangible example, Nicholas. You know, this idea of being able to connect into the immaterial plane, I know that it's difficult, you know, for the mind to like process, right? But for example, like you're doing this already. And one of the things that I'm really wanting to stand for is to democratize that everyone has these supernatural gifts. Everyone has these abilities to be able to connect in to the quantum field. And here's an example. Have you ever walked into a room and you can just tell that a couple has just had a fight?
Yeah.
And tell me, how do you know?
I mean, if I had to give my perception, it's you obviously get the mood in the room. So is that vibrations?
Yep.
Is that auras?
Yep.
You know, things like that. So it's like a sixth sense almost.
Precisely. Precisely. Right.
Yeah.
No one taught you how to do that. Right? You don't need to see anyone's faces. You don't need to like understand the context of the situation. It's something that you can feel that is just prickly in the environment that you are naturally attuned to. And you're like, something happened. Right? So that is your ability, what we call like clairsentience, or some people have clairempathy for the ability to sense into certain situations and to sort of like feel the environment. You didn't learn this in school. No one like taught you explicitly, and yet you know how to do it naturally. How is that? I make up that we're natural antennas, naturally connected in. We do have these supernatural abilities, and it's just our way of being in the world. We just know, we just need to learn how to be able to like name it, to trust it, and to be able to act on it. I'll give you another example. Have you ever walked into a football stadium and without even seeing the pitch or seeing the crowd, you kind of like get the tenor of what's going on?
Yeah, well, we call it soccer, but I know exactly what... Yeah, and again, I'm very big into vibrations, so maybe that's,
precisely,
again, is the antenna.
Yep.
And I've seen lots of studies on wavelengths on
precisely
physical objects through water and sound. So I'm a very big sound. I believe sound waves have some kind of, you know, impact.
It's all about frequency. Yeah. It's you know, this whole thing about like spirituality. Oh, I'm not into like religiosity. Oh, like I don't believe, like that just feels like so constraining. And I'm like, that's cool. If that's the way that you want to experience the world, that's fine. What I, you know, we have musical instruments in the back of us. For me, it's all about vibration, frequency, wavelength. There is a beautiful application between what we experience in science and what we experience in spirituality. To me, it's all the same thing. Science is essentially basically affirming or essentially like grounding the thing that we know is true, and yet it needs like some sort of translation. If I were to look at a dog, right, like I have a dog nearby, the dog can be able to hear and perceive sounds that are beyond my normal hearing range. Just because I myself as a human cannot be able to like hear that doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. It's there. It's just the dog has greater range. And so what I do when I work with people is extend their skill set and their abilities to be able to like look at the outer realms, the outer range, so that they can be able to perceive and sense things that are there but may not be naturally like attuned in our normal like human daily interaction.
But I think involved in this would be a certain amount of unlearning as well, I guess, because
absolutely
because we're in this Judeo-Christian or Abrahamic sort of religious system in the West typically.
Yeah,
a lot of this has just been misused or completely is completely irrelevant in the religious context, or would be heretical almost. And a lot of sort of, you know, old pagan, activities in that, which might have had some, you know, some semblance of a truth in that, were completely sort of wiped away. And I think with our current religious or duopoly with, you know, the religions that are about now, any dissenting voices are quickly put down. So it's obviously quite brave of you as well to come in with a sort of a different mindset in terms of spirit, talk, calling, you know, anything with spirituality, and it has sort of, you know, positive and negative connotations in people's minds. How do you sort of counteract that when you're speaking to people? Because, for example, the majority of MBA people that you would have dealt with, or CEOs and leaders, would have come through a very traditional Western Western education system with Western sort of religious and cultural values. How different do you think this, how receptive are they to this sort of this message that you're talking about?
Yeah. Well, I love that you're talking about unlearning, because one of the major things that I had to do was not necessarily like unraveling myself from religiosity, but more about unraveling myself from my dependency on my mind, right? Because I have a very strong mind. I'm very intellectual. I love like concrete results. I have an MBA. I love like ROI, all those things. But what I needed to do was move beyond just my way of knowing for my brain and be able to like access the wisdom that was all within me. And again, everyone has these abilities. How I came into this work was actually I got into a car accident when I was in South Africa, not too long after you and I had hung out in Cape Town. I'm still sort of like making sense of what happened during that accident. But what I make up was that I was only using one portion of my brain. And as a result of the accident, I suffered from PTSD, shock, depression. What I make up is in the process of the accident, like my brain got rewired. Like I developed new sort of like neuro connections, and I was using more of my brain, and therefore started being able to perceive the supernatural and to be able to experience things in a richer, deeper way. I believe that when people are encountering, whether it be COVID, divorce, trauma, layoffs, they have a very similar shock to the system, right? Pain is a pain is an invitation for transformation. And in a way, it is incredibly hurtful because they're going through this crucible moment. And yet at the same time, it's almost like their whole way of showing up in the world is shifting. And so when I encounter people, I'm not here to convince anyone, because they themselves already know something is shifting within them. They can't quite articulate it, but they know something weird is going on. And so what I do is I've actually been quite vocal in showing up and being like, hey, this is who I am. I am incredibly intellectual, but I also have my spiritual side. I'm going to be bold, and I'm actually going to name it, and I'm going to call it what it is. And as a result, what people are doing is they're actually mapping their experience to my experience. So I'm showing up authentically. I'm showing up as my full self. I'm showing up as my bad, brave, courageous self. And people are recognizing themselves in my journey, and they're like, oh, yeah, I get it. Yeah, I can see where what she's talking about. Maybe that's what's happening to me. And so when I'm like writing on LinkedIn or when I'm going on podcasts like this, my former crowd, you know, the Davos crowd, the people who have their MBAs, because I am articulate, because I are incredible, right? I have the pedigree. I have like the ability to show up as normal, not like so woo-woo, like believable, right? They're able to like come out of the woodwork and approach me. So when I write on LinkedIn, what's interesting is that I will get likes and I will get comments, not a heck of a lot, you know, compared to the average Joe. But let me tell you, Nicholas, like I will get a heck of a lot of DMs. Right? Because people are afraid of being able to like showcase their entire network, but they're just being like, hey, can we talk? And what I would advise people who are in this space that may seem a little bit of left field is claim it, be bold, and like be the first mover. Because when you allow yourself to like go first, other people are in awe and want to gravitate towards you. And that's what's happened in my journey. And essentially what's happening is that I'm leading leaders because I've decided to go first. And what I believe is like the future of leadership is the intersection between energetics as well as personal development. And, you know, all of this AI has essentially confirmed that, yeah, you can be able to outsource probably 80% of your leadership if you wanted to. But if you're really wanting to have the cutting edge in the next step, you need to be able to perceive the subtle realms and be able to activate and stabilize that frequency within yourself.
Yeah, I think the world is becoming so standardized now, which is not a nice thing. I think, you know, even though we look down on our ancestors and at the past and that, people had a much sort of closer, had a slightly bigger impact on the world, or had the opportunity to have a bigger impact on the world and people around them. With AI having, and again, I'm a big proponent of AI. I think it's going to be wonderful for in most cases, but in terms of taking businesses or yourself forward as a individual or as a leader, I think we are no longer going to have the big despots like the Putins and the Hitlers and the Maos and the Stalins and, you know, those big angry bosses. But we are going to have people that, like gurus almost, people who bring together a crowd of like-minded people, obviously with different skills, because you need that. And create new types of companies. Do we need another Coca-Cola? Do we need another, you know, another big beer brand? Do we need
1,000%.
Another? And I don't think we do. I think we, I don't know what the answer is, but I think we need something new in the sort of capitalist society and in terms of businesses and how we do things. I don't think it should be necessarily a social state and where everyone, it's a, you know, a hippie heaven. But I think that we've got to, people are looking for something new. People are looking for leaders who are doing something different and not doing the same old thing. And, you know, I'm finishing my MBA now as well. And I'm thinking, I'm reading all of my coursework and I'm going, 99 million other people have done exactly the same work as me, how much more value am I going to add to this discussion or into business where, and especially with AI, I can type in, okay, what is the ROI of this, or what is the, you know, economic XYZ of that? They don't need me in that sense. So what is it? So what people want is more that authentic self, as you were speaking about. How can you build that? Because the technical expertise has almost, you know, been removed from us. Now, we don't necessarily need that technical expertise as much as we did in the past.
Yeah, I'll agree with you to a certain extent. I think that people are hungering for embodied examples of spiritual leadership, and it is not going to look like a guru that sits on a mountain and is meditating 12 hours a day, right? The future of spiritual leadership is going to be people that look like you, people that look like me, people that look like Mark Benioff, the CEO of Salesforce, right? I think that there are this misconstrued vision of what it means to be a spiritual leader, that, you know, we're going to be on yoga mats and we're going to lose our edge and all this stuff. But the fact of the matter is that true innovation is actually not necessarily sourced from this plane. If we're Einstein has this beautiful quote, like the like you can't create like a something from the same level of consciousness that created it. You actually need to go a level higher. And as mentioned, you know, the solutions of our system are actually needed to like actually come from like an elevated plane. And so when you're able to learn how to access the subtle realms, what you're doing is actually downloading divine guidance and creating truly innovative solutions for how to move forward. You talk about the innovators of this world. No, we don't need another Coca-Cola. But back in the day, Steve Jobs, you know, people forget, he was an extremely spiritual person, right? How did he come up with products like Apple? You know, how did he come up with the iPhone that never existed before? He was a man who basically was learned how to be able to calm himself, be able to stabilize himself, and be able to download all these beautiful, innovative ideas that are forever changing the world. And I have my own particular opinions about how he showed up as a manager and as a leader. But this is an example of someone who has been able to significantly shift the tenor of the system because he's been able to cultivate that himself as an empty vessel so he can actually receive truly innovative designs, ideas to bring forth in the world. And that is precisely what we need at this time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we definitely need to have, you know, some different leadership models in industry, and especially when it comes to entrepreneurs. When we talk about spirituality and marketing, as I mentioned, we don't need another Coca-Cola. But in terms of, for example, a Coca-Cola, how could a company if I want to apply this spiritual thinking, how could a company, a large company or a startup company, apply this thinking, not just as from an individual perspective, so from a leadership perspective, but from a team or communications perspective? Is there a way to, is this a purely personal activity, or do you think that it has sort of a network effect? It can be sort of channeled into an organization or into a team or into a team particularly?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I primarily work one-on-one with the leaders, and as they embody what I call light, and as they embody higher levels of consciousness, they impact their teams and their organizations naturally. That being said, everything has a consciousness. So you as a leader has a consciousness, your brand has a consciousness, your organization has a consciousness. You are able to tap into the soul of the organization and essentially like figure out, what does the organization have to say? What does it need? where does it need to heal? In the same way that we encounter trauma as individuals, organizations encounter trauma as well. And so when we're actually connecting into the energetic field, we're able to see the spots where, you know, things aren't necessarily as like clean and shiny and fluffy as they probably ought to be. It's because we all sort of like acquire sort of like dust mites, so to speak, as we're moving through this world. And it is possible to actually like figure out like what are those pain points, be able to clear them so that things move smoothly. An organization that is as large as Coca-Cola, we are able to not only break it down in terms of the organization, in terms of like departments, and figure out like what needs to be done specifically within each department, but also as the organization as a whole. And so when I'm working with leaders, when I'm working with founders, what I do is I actually not only tap into their Akashic record, but also the Akashic record of their organization. And we do very pragmatic things like strategy, vision, and planning. And my God, their organization has a lot to say about where they want to go and how they want to provide value onto the world. And when we're actually receptive to that, when we're willing to be able to heal the trauma within the organization, but then also follow where the organization wants to contribute and be able to see how it might impact the system, and we're aligned with that divine path, it is phenomenal what happens in terms of growth and impact and sustainability.
You know, I've been thinking of how can I do better brand audits of an organization, and how can I get my customers to listen to what happens in the brand audits. And the problem is that because brand audits are, obviously, it's interviews, there's statistical work in there as well in terms of questionnaires. But the results that come out, it's exactly the same in most organizations. It just tells you what the issue is. It doesn't give, and obviously there's small things that you can adjust. But there are incremental adjustments. It doesn't say this is a new vision, this is a new way that the business should go about, you know, dealing with staff, dealing with its suppliers, dealing with people around you. I think if there was this sort of spiritual application in terms of taking it away from sort of numbers and putting it into, you know, taking it away from numbers and putting it back to people, which is again what businesses are there to serve. I think we might have healthier and better businesses. So I can definitely see the benefit of doing an exercise like this, where it's either another layer on top of, you know, when you're doing your brand audit, because it's good to have, like you said, the scientific side. But now we need to also then have a look at, okay, how do we make this more human? How do we make this, look at the business as an organization, as an organism?
And precisely.
Okay, where does this live in its environment and in its universe, and how do we move it forward? How do we make it valuable and impactful?
Yeah, I love what you're saying. The fact of the matter is that we're multidimensional beings, right? As human beings, we're mind, body, spirit, soul, right? Same thing with organizations. And if you're actually going to do truly transformational work, you need to be able to address things at all of those particular levels. If you're actually just addressing a business from pure statistics and finances, that's fine, but it's going to be superficial, right? Mm. An organization needs to be addressed in their wholeness. And when we do so, that's when significant shifts happen. And so what I'm doing is essentially opening people's aperture and just saying, I'm not dismissing the rational. And so I want to be very clear about that. I'm not saying statistics be gone, assessments be gone, right? I'm saying it's a both and, right? Do the statistical analysis, figure out what the messaging, conduct your interviews, and then understand that it is a deeper layer, and with this holistic view, then let's make those wise decisions.
Well, I've worked in Asia quite a lot, and I was always coming from a very Western background, very confused about all the feng shui consultants that they had coming in. talking about, okay, the entrance should be here, these colors should be used, that pond should be moved here, et cetera, for the flow of energy and that in the organization.
Sure.
And that did sound like a hokey pokey to me. When I was thinking, what is this? You know, Jesus wouldn't approve. But, you know, looking at it now, sort of, you know, unlearning a lot of, you know, what I grew up with, I can see that they are maybe applying part of what you're talking about.
Exactly,
in terms of,
yeah,
you know, trying to be more holistic. Don't just look at numbers. Numbers are as, you know, numbers and statistics are as ephemeral as, you know, spiritual things. So why do you put so much trust in this and nothing in, you know, and nothing in the sort of spiritual world? So, but I think there has to be that balance, because you are going to have the people who are very, you know,
sure,
not necessarily logical, but are fact-based,
yeah,
and are uncomfortable with anything that is,
and
you know,
what
ethereal.
I'll say, Nicholas, is that trust is a function of relationship. And I'm not saying that, you know, jump in headfirst and like sell all your belongings and go follow, you know, what God is telling you to do. What I'm saying is there's something else out there. You know it's true. Begin playing with that relationship. If you feel a ping, if you feel an impulse, follow it. Follow that nudge. Put it out into the system. See what comes back to you. As a result, you know, you will start to be able to build that trust. Eventually, that trust will yield to like intimacy. And then from there, you'll be able to make larger leaps and be able to like follow those nudges with greater intensity. But again, I'm not saying like cast everything aside. What I'm saying is begin developing that communication, because it is a two-way communication between you and the universe. See what happens. Start with something small. Start manifesting a parking spot. And then, you know, like seriously, like don't go ahead and like be like, I want like $1 billion tomorrow. I'm like, that's, you know, like, but there's a lot of doubt that comes in, because that's the immaterial plane. What I'm saying is start with something concrete and small and tangible. From there, your relationship will grow. And then from there, you're going to be able to trust more.
Yeah. I was going to talk a little bit about your sort of work across Africa and the States, and I can't remember, and Mauritius. I think you were also in Mauritius a while, but maybe we leave that for
sure.
another chat. But that's also sort of some fascinating work that you've done there. If people who should get in touch with you, so if I had to, you know, recommend to any folks who are going to listen to this to come and chat to you, who are the, you know, who do you like working with?
Yeah. Thank you for asking. I love working with founders. I love working with senior executives who are working with large communities of people, whether that be within their neighborhoods or organizations, and are looking to make substantive, positive impact in the world. They are yearning for more. They know that there's something out there. They may have experienced a significant shift, as mentioned, you know, those pain points of transformation. And they know that they're wanting to reevaluate their life priorities, right? You know, there's a lot of folks who have been experimenting with ayahuasca retreats and, you know, like all of the newfangled, yeah, things that are not so newfangled. That's not necessary to be able to work with me. I don't work with plant medicine. What I am yearning for is that people are desiring to be able to connect with something that's greater than themselves, and to be able to cultivate that language in their relationship and want to learn how to do it. So there's not a dependency on me, but to be able to share it with the world. And so looking for people who are wanting to show up boldly and to be able to have that sense of heart-centeredness, not only in their lives, but then also how they show up in their leadership roles.
Well, I'm super excited to see some of the results from the folks that you've worked with currently and in the future. I think specifically in marketing and leadership, we need something new. We need different thinking. We need different ways of going about the same old thing. And again, in this AI age, You've got to make your difference in the world now. So, and I think being sort of more grounded and more aware of what's going out there in the universe is an important aspect of that. So, Tiffany, thanks so much for chatting with us.
Yeah, the time is now. Absolutely.
I really appreciate you sharing your insight and wisdom with us, and hope that folks do get in touch with you and that we make some small little changes in our community.
Well, you know what, Nicholas, the small little changes aren't so small. As we shift our ways of being, it actually shifts our communities, and this is how we actually truly change the world. If folks want to get in touch with me, I can be reached at my website, www.tiffanymchan.com, and they can contact me via my email as well. There's a form there, and it's very easily accessible.
Great.
Awesome.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And yeah.
It was a pleasure.
Come chat with Nicholas. He'll listen to you. Then he'll laugh and then he'll cry with you. It's all in a safe space for you to speak your truth.